Good morning, everyone. Today's Daf and Yevamos is Dalad. We're in Gimel Amud Beis. We're towards the bottom of the Amud. The time of the Kasa Rachman is where we're beginning. It's about five lines from the bottom. The Gemara gave us the Drashas yesterday. So we now learned in our Mishnah, this is the beginning of Masechta Yevamos, so that in the event that there is a death and they are left childless, so there's a mitzvah of Yibum. The brother now has an opportunity to marry his sister-in-law, his widowed sister-in-law, in order to perpetuate the name of his brother. That is the mitzvah of Yibum, which we've now been discussing for 2 days. And even though marrying your sister-in-law is a violation of the Torah prohibits many of the arayos, many of the family members, and one of them is being eshesach. You're not allowed to marry your brother's wife. And as we've discussed already numerous times and stated at the beginning of this mesechta, once an erva, always an erva. I say that with an exception, but your eshesach, your brother's wife is an erva. So we are looking now at the tension between the mitzvah of the Torah of Yibum and an avera, a most serious avera of arayos. So how does it work? The answer is it works. Meaning to say that the Torah permits it. So the Torah permits one to marry his sister-in-law, despite the fact that she's eshesach. But as we already discussed in the beginning of Mishnah, but that's only if she's one erva. But what if, let's say, she's multiple arayos? Let's say not only is she your brother's wife, but she also happens to be your daughter as well. And 14 other scenarios in which there's another erva on which to speak about. Now, I say that, by the way, that's slightly imprecise. The Mishnah, all 15 cases of the Mishnah do not introduce other arayos. One of them does not involve another erva, but regardless, I need to dot the I's over there. Anyway, but let's say she's another erva in addition to being eshesach, so let's say she's your daughter. So how's that possible? The answer is very simple. In other words, your brother married your daughter. Your brother's allowed to marry your daughter. So again, the answer simply there is yes. Your brother's allowed to marry your daughter. So the Torah allows for the niece. In other words, not all family members are prohibited in the Torah. Most of the family members are prohibited in the Torah, but the niece is permitted. In fact, not only is the niece permitted, encouraged. Not nowadays. But Bizman HaGemara, though, and Bizman and going back, so it was permitted and in fact encouraged. So if your brother married your daughter, so under those circumstances now, so Rachmanis, the brother dies, so now you're looking at a woman who is not one but two arayos. She's Eshesach and she's Bito. And the Mishnah illustrated numerous other cases as well in which she could be an additional erva. Under those circumstances, so now there's no mitzvah of Yibum. At that point in time, the lav is going to take precedence, and there's no longer a mitzvah of Yibum. Not only is there no mitzvah of Yibum, there's an iser. The iser to marry her, she's eshesach, she's bito, whatever the other arayos are, and you're not allowed to marry her. How do I know that? So that goes back to yesterday's daf. Going back to yesterday's daf, Minahan Emili, so from where do I know this information? And the Gemara quoted a Braisa. Most of Gimel Amud Beis, which is half of yesterday's daf, so presented a Braisa that basically gave us the drushas and the psukim to give us this particular halacha. Okay. That is what we've been discussing now in the last couple of days. Next 2 days of the daf, really almost 3 days of the daf, are going to be really enjoyable, but at the same time also a little bit technical. In that, so basically what we're looking at is that we're weighing and we're balancing what happens when you have a mitzvah sase and a lo sase, and what happens when the two collide with one another. Here's what we know. When I have an sase and a lo sase and they collide against one another, so we say that the sase is docha lo sase. Now I know we say that. Where do we say that? When do we say that? Happens to be today's daf. So in today's daf, we're going to be exploring this topic of sase docha lo sase. Also over here, keep in mind that this is not a regular case of essay and lo sase, because over here, arayos is a lo sase shi yeshbo kares. It's not only a negative prohibition, it's one that carries the punishment of kares. Now that's a more serious and more severe isser. How many surim are there in the Torah that carry a kares penalty? So the number is really small. It's only 34. 34 isurim in the Torah that carry a kares penalty, arayos being one of the 34. The listing of all the averus in the Torah that carry a kares penalty is found in the beginning of Masechtas Krisos. It makes sense. The Masechta dedicated to kares. So here it's not exactly the same. Here it is a lav sheish bo kares. So it's not the same as your classic case of essay versus lo sase. So what we're going to be doing today, tomorrow, and Sunday as well is that we're going to just basically generate the halachas. How do I know that when I'm balancing these two one against the other, how do I know what's going to win out? How do I know the essay is going to be docha lo sase? How do I know that if it's a lo sase, sheish bo kares, that's a different story? So how do I know all that that's coming up in the Gemara's over here? Okay. Now, it is going to be fundamental. It's going to be extraordinarily enjoyable. But at the same time, however, I caution everyone. What the Gemara is going to do, as the Gemara classically does, is that it gives drushas, it gives precedent, but it does not. It's not going to give any svaras. Meaning the svaras in terms of why is Esei Dochelos Esei? So you're not going to hear that from the Gemara because that's not usually what the Gemara delves into.
It's actually it's a mitzvah. It's from Hashem. So why do you have to try to justify it?
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. Okay. Time is the Kasa Rechmana Aleha. Okay. So as we learned in yesterday's daf, how do I know? That in the face of Arias, again, anything other than Eshesach, in the face of Arias, so the answer is no. The answer is you cannot do the mitzvah of Yibum. And it's based on a drasha. Meaning what? Meaning that there's a default and then there's a drasha. So what's the default? So halav hachi hava min achus isha miyavemis. So I then would have thought that achus isha should yibum. Meaning to say, let's say she's not only your brother's wife, but she's also your sister's, your wife's sister. Not only is she your brother's wife, but she's also your wife's sister. In other words, like we said on the beginning of the Masechta, two brothers married two wives. Sorry. Thank you. Thank you. Like I said, all family relationships are complicated, and right, just, you know, I could trip over this. It's good. So two brothers married two sisters. So in that case now, so Rechman is in the event that one of the brothers die. So not only is the widow now going to be your brother's wife, again, no longer, but still from an Arayah standpoint, not only is she going to be your brother's wife, but she's also your wife's sister. And we said that was the pasuk that generated the Isser, that you can't marry her. But we have a drasha to tell us that, which means that there's a default. Before the drasha, what would have been our conclusion? Our conclusion, it would have been okay. So miyavemis, my taima, darmin an esei doch, asi esei v'docha lo sasei. Oh, it's because the esei is going to override the lo sasei. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. Hey, darmin an esei asi v'docha lo sasei greida. Yes, that's true. But that's just a flat line lo sasei, a baseline lo sasei, just a regular lav. But over here, we're not just talking about a baseline lav. We're talking about a lav she yeshbo kares. Vesu lo sase greater minalan de dachi. And while we're on the topic, let's just also ask a really simple question. How do I know that an essay is going to override a lo sase? So really what we have over here is a question within a question. Meaning the Gemara starts off with our discussion in Yevamos of the man's ability or inability to marry his sister-in-law. And again, in the case of Eshesach, you're allowed to. But if you introduce any other erva, you're not allowed to. So the question is, why not? But really, the question over here is layered. Because the question is, why not? And if it had not been for the drasha, it would have seemed like it would have been okay. Meaning the default is that it's acceptable. The drasha tells us that it's not. So the Gemara wants to know, why the default setting? That it's okay. And then the question within the question is, and even before we explore that question, let's ask a even more basic question. How do I know? Asei dochelo sasei. Meaning, take out the lav sheish bo kares. Just deal with a regular case of a lav. How do I know that a positive commandment is going to override a negative prohibition? Where do I know that from? Okay. So in today's daf, we're only answering question number two, the more basic question. And it's not until tomorrow's daf are we going to even go back to question number one. Okay, so we're going to start answering. But before we start answering, so let's just pick up with Ben's question. Ben wants to know, the Gemara over here is looking for case study precedent. How do I know that essays dochelo sasei, and where do we get these default positions from? Why are we looking anywhere else other than right here? Meaning we are discussing the mitzvah of Yibum. Let's analyze the mitzvah of Yibum. It's really simple. In other words, the Torah says that you see that woman over there who's prohibited to you. She's Eshesach. She was your brother's wife. So now there's a mitzvah that you have to go marry her. So what are we looking at over here? We're looking at a positive commandment, and we're looking at a negative prohibition. And not only that, we're even looking at a negative prohibition with kares, and the Torah says marry her. So as we are going to be searching throughout the Torah of case studies of Esei Dochelo Sasei, right here, we're right here. So why not learn it right from right over here? This seems to be the best proof. Now, I say that knowing full well that all you have to do is just introduce one other erva and the whole building falls down and the whole argument falls apart. Okay, but before we get complicated with other arayos, meaning just deal with the very basic case of Yibum and just simply say, hey, this is the case of an essay and a los assay. So Tosfos is bothered by this very question. Why is the Gemara not turning to Yibum as any kind of case study? The Tosfos starts on the bottom of Gimel Amud Beis and goes to the top of Dal Amud Aleph. So Lo Sa'aseh Sheyesh Bo Karis Ve'im Tomar. I know I had them here. Ve'im Tomar. Ve'amai Lo Yofin and Delitche Ma'isa Di Yibum Dedach Lo Sa'aseh Dekaris Deish Esach. Okay, so he formulates the question beautifully. Why not use Yibum as a case study? And a really good one at that. And Tosfos discusses, and take a look at Dal Amud Aleph, and take a look, as I'm going to be reading the key line of Tosfos. V'omari. So this is now in Dal Amud Aleph, and it's four lines down. V'omari d'me'eshesach lomasi l'me'elaf, ba'ama, d'litcheyase lo sase, sheish bokaris. So we can't learn that from Yibum. Why? And here comes the critical words. D'sharni eshesach d'mitzvaso bekach. So you have to take eshesach out of the equation, out of the discussion, because mitzvaso bekach. And there's no alternative way to do the mitzvah of Yibum. Okay. Now, truth of the matter is that we could be spending the rest of the daf on that one line of Tosfos. We're not going to. In other words, we have a daf to cover. Our goal is really simple, and that is to finish a daf every day. So, but we could be spending the rest of today just on that one line of Tosfos. Mitzvah so bekach. That because the mitzvah has to be done in this way, so therefore take this case off the table. There's no other way to do the mitzvah of Yibum. The design, the very design of Yibum demands that you have to marry your brother-in-law's wife. That's the mitzvah. So why is this now going to be exceptional? And because mitzvah is a bekach, as opposed to all the other cases we're going to be dealing with, so it's something to think about. It's a lot to think about. Okay.
Isn't every case the same?
No. And in fact, Tosfos, if you just read a little bit further in Tosfos, Dim Lav Kain, about the mitzvah of Yibum. You see, one of the cases that we are going to look at today is Kalayim on Tzitzis. You see, by Tzitzis, I don't have to violate the Avera. Meaning, what is the Avera? The Avera is putting wool on a linen garment. Wool strings on a linen garment. And affixing them and knotting them. And that's an Avera. Did I have to do that? No, I didn't have to do that. In other words, I could have made linen strings. Right. What's it called? It's everyone wants to know why. What I'm not trying to say is that you're not special, because you are special. The most classic explanation is that by the Ramban. Just in other words, from the Gemara standpoint, I mentioned in the beginning of Shir today. I'll repeat. It's the Gemara. It's not the focus of the Gemara. The Gemara does not discuss why, and I understand it. You know, that's what makes Gemara sometimes a little bit difficult to learn, because the Gemara is, you know, going to do what it does classically. It goes over case studies, and let's look at this case, and let's look at that case, and the Gemara doesn't ask why. The most classic explanation that's given in terms of Esei Docheh Lo Sa'aseh is the Ramban. The Ramban's presentation of Esei Docheh Lo Sa'aseh is what you just suggested, is that the essay is a reflection of our love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the things we're going to do for Hashem, and the Lo Sa'aseh is our fear of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that which we're not going to do because we're afraid. And when now I have a clash between love and fear, so love is going to trump fear. I know it's a really nice message, it's a beautiful message, but the Ramban sees it as a halachic message, meaning halacha is going to put love over fear. Okay. Dichsiv. So we are now back on Daf Dalam and Aleph, and now here we go, looking throughout the Torah to find Esed being Docheh Lo Sa'aseh. So here we go, and this is going to be the classic example in Lo Sov Hashad Nizgidil Mitaselach. So we turn now to Dvarim, Parashas Kiseitse. And the Torah says that you're not allowed to wear shatnez, wool and linen, that are put together in a garment. You're not allowed to wear it. And also, Gedilim Taselach, and also you have to wear tzitzis. And those two are juxtaposed, one right next to the other. Now, this is what we're going to call smuchin. Now, it is a little bit easy to confuse smuchin and hekesh. And when I say easy, I confuse it. So it's easy to confuse it. But hekesh, the basic idea behind hekesh is that I have two ideas that are contained in one pasuk. Smuchin is where I have a pasuk, and they're next to one another, juxtaposed. I'm not sure if my definition is precise, but it's a working definition, and it'll work. So this is what's called smuchin. And smuchin in Atar Minayin, and this idea of smuchin, when I have two pesukim that are next to one another, and it allows me to darshin, shenemer smuchim la'ad la'olam asuyim be'emes v'yashar. And we have a pasuk in Tehillim speaking about smuchin. But the pasuk in Tehillim obviously here is taken out of context, and this is not the intent of the pasuk in Tehillim to talk about a method of drasha. But regardless, in other words, the idea that when I have psukim one right next to another, so that's significant. So I have the mitzvah of tzitzis next to the iser of shatnes, which now tells me that the psukim are next to each other, and that tells me now that when they are next to one another, even though it's shatnes, still the mitzvah of tzitzis is going to override and trump. Now, as long as we talk about smuchin, the Gemara just for a moment is going to give us another example of smuchin, and that is minayin leivam shenafla lifnei mukashchin shein chos menosa. This is totally left field. It happens to be the example over here is yibum related, but this is just another example of smuchin. I would say I'm not sure why it's brought in over here, meaning it's not germane to our discussion of esse and losa say, but it's an example of smuchin. And it also is related to Yibam. And that's the following. You have a Yavama, and her brother-in-law is not the most pleasant person. I don't mean it from a personality standpoint. I mean physically, he is just simply intolerable. Okay. And for whatever reason, the man she was married was fine, but her surviving brother is just intolerable physically. And so now we're going to discuss, and this is a bit uncomfortable, but it's a halacha, and I'm not going to sugarcoat. And we're going to be discussing over the course of this masechta that Yibum is a shidduch made by heaven. Kadosh Baruch Hu made the shidduch. You didn't choose, you didn't elect. In other words, you elected somebody else, but unfortunately he died, and the surviving brother, okay, now he has a mitzvah of Yibum, he has a mitzvah to marry you. It's a shidduch made from heaven. And so, understandably, it's uncomfortable. But the truth of the matter is, it's even a little bit more uncomfortable. Because the halacha is that unlike a man and a woman where you need the woman's consent, when it comes to Yibum, you do not need the woman's consent. Okay? I know, it's a little bit hard to swallow, but that's the halacha. However, if the man is clearly somebody who is inappropriate for her, so at that point in time, so we advise. And we tell the man, do chalitza and don't do Yibum. And not only is that a din derabanan, that's actually a pasuk in the Torah. Now, it's not a clear pasuk in the Torah, as we're learning right now, it's smuchin. It's based on the following juxtaposition. So she'ein chos menoso she'nemer lo sachsum shor bedisha. So the pasuk says that she'nemer lo sachsum an animal v'samech leki yesh v'achim yachdav, when two brothers are next to one another, meaning that's the beginning of the parsha of Yibum. V'amr Rav Yosef. Sorry, before we get to the next point of the Gemara. Now, obviously, over here, this muchin is a little bit of a stretch, meaning lo sachsum shor bedisha is talking about not muzzling your animal. We're not talking about an animal over here. We're talking about a woman. And Rachman is a widow. So, but the idea is, however, is that just like when an animal is threshing and you're not allowed to muzzle the animal and you're allowed to, and you are required to allow the animal to snack and eat while it's threshing. In other words, be gentle to the animal, more than gentle to the animal. In other words, be kind to the animal. So same thing regarding the Yavama, right? Don't muzzle her. Meaning right now she has a legitimate complaint about who now she is supposed to marry, and don't muzzle her. And if she is going to make a taina, that I can't marry my brother-in-law. In other words, right? Anyone who looks in will understand. So under those circumstances, lo sachsum shor bedisho, you gotta advocate on her behalf. In other words, based in will advocate on her behalf. Okay. So it's just another example of smuchin. Now, this idea of smuchin, so when I have two psukim, one next to another, and that allows me to form a halacha, the Amr of Yosef, afilo mandalo, darish smuchin ba'ama, b'mishta Torah darish. Now, there are people resistant to this method of drasha. Okay, who these people are, we'll name a name. Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda happens to be slightly resistant to this method of smuchin. Okay, it's tenuous, I guess, I suppose. Meaning, unlike a kavah chomer, which is a logical argument, and a gzera shava, which is a tradition received from Rebbe to Talmud. So smuchin is, hey, you see those two psukim, they're next to one another? Ah, allow me to drush, to darshan. Look, the rabbis do that all the time. But as a drusha, they do that. Over here, we're generating halacha, right? It's a much more serious endeavor. And to generate halacha based on smuchin, okay, so there are those who are resistant. But the Gemara makes a really interesting point over here, and that is, even those people who are resistant to, in general, to the idea of smuchin, if it occurs in Sefer Devarim, they're much more open to it. Sefer Devarim is much more fertile for making smuchin. Now, why should that be? Again, that's a why question. And I do have suggestions, but the Gemara doesn't discuss. The Gemara now is just going to look at Rabbi Yehuda and say, look, in general, he's resistant to smuchin. And when it comes to Dvarim, he's more open to smuchin. How do I know that? So here they're going to be spending a good part of today's Amud Aleph just showing off Shitas Rav Yehuda, that generally speaking he's resistant, and in Sefer Dvarim, he's open. In general, give you the following example, the Tanya. We're going to turn to a halach in Parshas Mishpatim. You have a witch, so she is subject to the death penalty. And even though the Torah describes it as a female, of course it would be true for a male as well. Male practices magic and sorcery, also subject to the death penalty. Now, which death penalty? Torah doesn't say. That's important. In other words, obviously, if we're going to give somebody capital punishment, then there are four death penalties to choose from, so Beis Din needs to know. Well, how are they going to know? So, v'nemer kol shochei v'behema mos yumas, and so in sorcery is put right next to bestiality, so samchen inyan lo, ma shochei v'behema b'skila, af mechashefa b'skila. So bestiality is subject to the death penalty of skila, so is sorcery, and it's based on smuchin. That is the shita of the Tanakama. Amalei Rav Yehuda v'chimin misha samchu inyan lo nosi zula skila. So Rav Yehuda says, oh, so let me hear you correctly. I have two psukim next to one another, and now I'm going to kill somebody just because two psukim are right next to each other and give them that. Well, the Torah says lo sechaya, but. And you're going to now dictate which form of the death penalty just because two psukim are right next to another? So the Gemara is making a really strong argument. It's really a strong case that Rav Yehuda is very resistant to smuchin. He doesn't like it. So Rav Yehuda has a different source. His conclusion is going to be the same. It just happens to be that we have examples of Ovi Yadoni. These are specific types of necromancy and different forms of sorcery, but they're forms of sorcery, and there the Torah gives us the specific manner in which they're put to death through skila, and since they are subsections of sorcery and magic practice, so therefore we're going to assume that magic practice also has the punishment of skila. But what we got from that is that Rav Yehuda is resistant to smuchin. Over Mishnah, Tarmi Nalan Darish. Now, how do I know that when it comes to Sefer Dvarim, Rav Yehuda is open to smuchin because of the following? Nosi Adam Anusas Avim Mefutas Avim Anusas Beno Mefutas Beno. So let's say your father violates a woman. He didn't marry her. He violated her. Okay. Now, can the son then go ahead and take her as his wife? It's a simple question, and the answer is it's subject to a debate. Your father's wife is an erva. But a woman that your father just simply had relations with, out of wedlock, machlokas. Tanakam is of the position that it is permissible. And Rabbi Yehuda, Oser, Banusas Aviv, or Mefutas Aviv. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, it's prohibited. Now, that's a wide range of viewpoints regarding a woman, whether she's permitted or prohibited. Now, as far as Va'amrav Gidol Amrav, my time with Rabbi Yehuda, what's the reason for Rabbi Yehuda? Dichsiv. So the Torah says that a man is not allowed to take a woman. The wife of one's father, the first part of the pasuk is really clear. And don't reveal the corner of your father. What is that? What is that referring to? So kanaf shara aviv lo yigale. So any woman that your father was with, so you are not allowed to be with her. That's anusa. Now how do I know that? Meaning, the Torah doesn't say the word anusa. The Torah uses a very vague and obscure term of kanaf. How do I know that's talking about anusa? Mi'ilave dekra. So this is now Rabbi Yehuda talking. Well, this is our explanation for Rabbi Yehuda. Go back into the parsha. Dechsiv v'nasan ha'isha shochev ima la'vi anara chamishim kesef. V'samech le lo yikach ish v'chule. You have the juxtaposition. And the parsha immediately prior is talking about the parsha of rape. So since the previous parsha is talking about rape in Parshas Ki Tzeitzei, which is in Sefer Devarim, so to over here, this is now contextually also talking about rape as well, meaning the two psukim are next to one another. That is the svara behind the sheet of Rav Yehuda. It's based on smuchin. Now, the Chachamim obviously disagree. Now, why? So the Chachamim would say, look, if it was really one next to each other, so I will give it to you. But over here, it's not absolute smuchin. Why not? Now, here we normally skip the parentheses, but it helps right now. Dichsiv lo yikach ish es eishes aviv bein tayim. Because what is between the parsha of Ones and the parsha of Knaf Aviv? Well, it's not really a parsha, but still. There is something separating them. There is a pasuk or a phrase of the pasuk separating them, so it's not a bona fide smuchin. So therefore, if according to the Chachamim, it's not talking about Anusas Aviv, so what is it talking about? Oh, so it's talking about Shomeres Yabam HaKasim Adaber. According to the Chachamim, the Knaf Aviv over here, the cloak of your father, it's obviously a euphemism, but it's referring to a woman who your father's not married to, but your father is supposed to marry, i.e. Shomeres Yavam. Meaning that what happened is that your father had a brother. He happens to be your uncle. Your father had a brother, and Rachmanis, he died and left childless. And now the widow has a mitzvah of Yibum. That is now a zika between that woman and your father. And for that, the Torah, according to the Chachamim, is telling us, Lo yigale knaf aviv. Now, hopefully you're wondering to yourself, wait one second. I need a pasuk to prohibit her to the son? Meaning, do you know what the halacha is regarding any Shomer Yavam? She is prohibited to be with any man. We're going to be discussing this at length over the course of our Masechta. When a woman has a Yibum opportunity, she's a Shomeres Yavam. So she has now a Zika to that man. That's a quasi-marriage to that man. She may not be with any other man. So over here, the Lo Yigale Knaf Aviv is talking about the son can't be with a woman who currently is a Shomeres Yavam to his father. Well, of course. In other words, no one could be with her. We knew this already. So what are we adding over here? Another lav? And the Gemara says, yeah, it happens to be, yeah, that's right. We're adding another lav. V'lav or lav v'shnei lavim. Now, to violate two lavim. Actually, if you think about it, it's more than two lavim. It's actually three lavim. Meaning it is it's a shomeres yavam, and it's also it's this iser of lo yigale knaf aviv, and on top of that, it's also your uncle's wife, who's also prohibited to you. Okay, anyway.
Is to increase the punishment? Or?
Yeah, the topic of multiple lavim on the same act is an interesting one. In other words, does that mean that they're going to be receiving actually multiple sets of malchus? Okay, really good question. Or just simply to highlight how prohibited it is? Okay, Danny, it's a good question. Over Mishnah Torah, my tamei d'darish. Okay, now. The Gemara over here is going to help us understand a little bit better in terms of why that is. Meaning, what we just established in today's daf is that there's this method of drasha called smuchin. And that really gets us to the source of Ese Docha Lo Saseh. Because I have the Parsha of Tzitzis right next to the Parsha of Kalayim, and they're next to one another, smuchin. And this idea of smuchin, when I have two psukim right next to each other, and allows us to darshan halacha, so this is now a bona fide method of how to darshan the Torah. And it really provides a source for Ese Docha Lo Saseh. And what we did on the Amud Aleph of today's daf is that we highlighted even those Tanaim, notably Rabbi Yehuda, whose resistance to Smuchin in general, and we prove that, nevertheless, when it comes to Sefer Dvarim, he's open to Smuchin. Okay, what's so special about Sefer Dvarim in this regard? That's a good question. The Gemara now is going to answer. Now, my taima uve Mishnah Torah, four lines from the bottom, on Dal Amud Aleph. Uve Mishnah Torah, my taima de Darish. So why? Why? Why is Sefer Dvarim more fertile for darshaning than the other four books of the Torah? It's a great question. So, So the Gemara gives two possible answers. One, muchach. What does that mean? Rashi writes. Rashi writes all but one line. Muchach lemidrashinu ahadadi samchinu. Meaning, consider what's happening in Sefer Dvarim. Now, most of the mitzvahs have already been rolled out. Now, that's not perfectly true. Let's just use Yibum as an example. You know, this is the first and only time in the Torah that Yibum is introduced to us is in Sefer Dvarim. I'll give you another really weird example in terms of mitzvahs and averus in the Torah where not mentioned prior. Gittin. Gittin is not mentioned anywhere else in the Torah, and in Sefer Dvarim it's mentioned. Okay, so I say that Dvarim is a repeat. It's not really a repeat. It is mostly a repeat. But it's mostly a review, but there is new information, new mitzvahs introduced in Sefer Dvarim. Okay. But still, what Sefer Dvarim is now is it's a review and it's a collection, and there was clear interest in, I'm going to review the information, but I'm going to present it this one, followed then by this one, followed then by this one. Meaning it is, like I said earlier, it's fertile. Meaning it's a perfect opportunity where I'm going to intentionally put one mitzvah next to the other, so that you can look at them side by side and say, hey, Why did that happen? Ah, smuchin. Okay. Ibai say mishum de. I'm sorry. And that's one possibility. The other one is mishum de mufne, because it's extraneous. In other words, dvarim is extraneous, like I said earlier. And by virtue of the fact that the Torah now repeated it in sefer dvarim, must be for a reason. Now the Gemara says like this: Ibai say mishum de muchach im kain lichtav erech menagabe arayos. Because over here, what we are now we are now looking at. Right now we're looking at Anusas Aviv and Mefutas Aviv or Shomer Siavam of Aviv, whichever way you're going to go. Let's keep it simple. Let's keep it like Rabbi Yehuda, right? Rabbi Yehuda says that Kanaf Aviv is referring to Anusas Aviv. So if in fact this were talking about just Stam, your father's wife, your father's love interest, so I got a good place to put that. Meaning where does that belong? Send it back to Vayikra, the 18th and the 20th prakim of Vayikra. So and by virtue of the fact that the Torah now puts it over here, so that was by design. That's muchach. On the other hand, or not the other hand, but an alternative way to say it is ibai zemim mishum debufte, or because it's repetitive. Dim kein lichter rechman lo yikach ish es eshes aviv lo yigale kenaf aviv lamali. Meaning, the Torah already says that you're not allowed to marry your father's wife, and then it goes and it repeats lo yigale kenaf aviv, which is repetitive and superfluous. So lamali. So shmamina, we're in the top of the Amud Beis. Shmamina lafnu ye. So therefore, it's for the purposes of repetition being superfluous, but the Torah is not superfluous. If the Torah is going to repeat something, it's there to make a point. So shmamina lafnu ye. Okay. So that was anusas aviv. Now let's go to tzitzis. V'gabi tzitzis nami. Ibai se mishum demuchach v'ibai se mishum demufne. So now that we know that we're looking for one of two cues as it relates to a pasuk in Sefer Devarim, meaning the Amud Beis is going to be all focused on one point, and that is for Rabbi Yehuda, who generally speaking is resistant to smuchin, but in Sefer Devarim is open to smuchin, and now for two possible reasons. One, muchach. Two, mufne. Muchach is basically design. Mufne is because of it's superfluous. And so now we're going to take this model, and now we're going to plug it into Kalayim B'Tzitzis. We're going to have to show how Kalayim B'Tzitzis is either muchach or mufne. And that's going to be the rest of today's daf. Now, I say it as if it's no big deal. It's going to be a little bit complicated, but at least now we all know what the Gemara is trying to do. Okay, so, tzitzis nami ibai sema mishum demuchach v'ibai sema mishum demufne ibai sema mishum demuchach. So we're going to start with first design. Imkein lechtevei rechman agabi parsha tzitzis, because where? Does the Torah talk about the mitzvah of tzitzis? That's in Parsha Shlach. Okay, so since it talks about it in Parsha Shlach, so you know where the Torah should have inserted Gedilim Tasalach, it should have been back in Parsha Shlach. So Lamai Hilksakasuyacha, why is the Torah right over here? Muchach, that's design. Okay, good. That's one. Now, Ibai Zemim Mishum Demufne. Now let's talk about it being superfluous, because again, we have to cover both bases, the Muchach and the Mufne. So we cover the Muchach, now let's cover the Mufne. How is it superfluous? So Michti, because of Ubeg Klaim Shanis Layala Alecha, let's consider the following. The Torah says, back in Parshas Kedoshim, that you are not allowed to wear a garment made up of kalayim, a mixture of wool and linen. Now it says lo ya'ala alecha. Now I turn to Parshas Kisetze and it says lo silba shanes lamali shmamin alafnu ye. And the Torah says that you're not allowed to wear shanes. Hey, didn't we know that already? So it's repetitive. Okay, good. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second, not so good. Hana mitzvah tzrichi. What are you talking about? It's not superfluous. I need both psukim. Why? Because Rachman lo yala alecha hava mina kol derech halah asa Rachman afilo mochrei ksus. I would have thought that anytime you put shanes on you, even if you are a seller of garments, or you're a seller of clothing, and right now I'm putting it on me right now, not because I want to wear it, not because I'm getting any benefit from it, but because I want to sell it. This is what we would call a davashena miskavin. Rashi writes that. Rashi is the third line. Ein miskavnin lahanas chimum. We're just simply not interested right now. We're not intent on getting benefit from it. And it's in general, it's not going to be an avera. Now, I know it's a psik reisha, meaning if you wear the clothing, by definition, you're going to get benefit from it. So this is a really longer discussion regarding psik reisha by other isurim. Okay, but anyway, let's just say the Gemara over simply. And that is that if I only had the pasuk of halaa, I would have thought that any form of wearing it, even when my intention is not to wear it, it would be usher. So therefore, kasa rachmana lo seba shatnei, zdumya de levisha, dis be'ana'a. So the pasuk in Parshas Ki Seitzeh is there to teach me what? That the only way I'm violating the Torah is derech levisha. Only when I'm intent on getting the benefit from the garment. But if I had the pasuk of Lo Silbash, so then I would have said, when am I violating the Isser? When I'm wearing the item. But what if I'm just covering myself with the item like a blanket, and I love its warmth, but I'm not wearing it. I'm just covering myself with it. Is that a violation? If I only had Lo Silbash, I would have said, nah, that's not a violation. And therefore, Halaa is coming to tell me that even putting the blanket on you when you want its warmth, that too is going to be a violation. Huh. So now what we just discovered is I need both. Well, that's bad. Because again, I know, but that's bad. Because what I need now is I need mufne. I need the Torah to be superfluous to allow for smuchim to occur. But right now we just made a really good argument that I need both. So the Gemara says, Imken lechtov rechmana lo sil bashanis. So the Gemara says, okay, let's try to attack it in this manner. The Torah says, Lo sil bashanis. And then the Torah says, Samu pishtem lamali. And then the Torah says, oh, woolen linen. That's superfluous. Michde, kasavu beged klaim shanes lo yala alecha. And how do I know it's superfluous? Where else did the Torah tell me that shanes is a construct, it's a combination of woolen linen? Well, the truth of the matter is, it didn't say clearly, but we know it. So it's, yeah, correct.
Practical question.
Yeah.
You haven't checked it. It might have shatness, and then you're putting it on. It's not yours.
Right. Okay, fine. So
you're testing it.
It's a great question. I think most people will say that you can try it on. Right now your intention is just to see if it fits, or if it doesn't fit. Okay, and consult your local rabbi. But most people will tell you it's okay. So michti kasav ubeget klaim shanes lo yala alecha. So where do I know it? I know it from the following, meaning we need to first establish that shanes is wool and linen in order to say that the pasuk and dvarim is superfluous. Well, how do I know that? So you have to know the following. It's a brisa. V'tan debe Rav Shmuel hoven emra b'torah stam begadim upar lecha kasav echad mehem semer upishtim av kol semer upishtim. So what we have now is, let's call it a binyan av. Beged. Where does the Torah use the word beged? A lot of times. But halachically, where is it used? In saras. Okay? And the Torah, when outlining how saras can affect either your house or you or your clothing. And there, by saras, the Torah is very clear where it says temru pishtim. And since it says it over there, highlighted with the word beged, that now tells me that every time the Torah says the word beged, it means temru pishtim. Ah, temru pishtim de kasra rachman alam lishma min alaf nuyeh. So now I know the word beged by itself means semu pishtim, and now I turn to Parshas Devarim, where it says that you're not allowed to wear shatnez, and then it also says semu pishtim, that's superfluous. Ah, and that's what we want. We want it to be superfluous. So it's semu, so shmamin alafnuye. Vakati yitzarech, so the Gemara says, no, I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced it's superfluous. Sakadachamina halahi delo nafish anaso, avalavisha de nafish aniaso, kotri tre mine asrachmana. So kasav rachmana tzemru pishtim. So kol treimine asar rachmana. So the Gemara proposes the following. Look, if I'm just putting the blanket on top of me, where there I'm and I want the warmth. So over there under those circumstances, you know what? I'm ready to hear how beged over there is just tzemru pishtim. But if I'm wearing clothing where I'm getting even more hana'a, maybe, again, this is what I would have thought, maybe the Torah's prohibition is to take any two different materials and combine them together. And that's why I need Semer Upishtim to tell me that no, even Derech Levisha, even if I'm wearing it, it only is limited to Semer Upishtim. So if we're right, if our argument is correct, so now it turns out that there's a need for that Pasuk, and again, it's not superfluous. So Kasar Rechman Semer Upishtim. So Im Kain Lishto kramine. So the Gemara says, yeah, but I'll tell you what, the Torah could have just gotten away by saying nothing. V'tesi shanes shanes me'alah. And what we could have done is we could have just simply made a gzera shava. Meaning, even if there wasn't a superfluous statement, there could have been a gzera shava. Now, truth of the matter is, just between you and I, that's a difficult argument. There could have been a gzera shava. When do we ever say there could have been a gzera shava? Gzera shavas are kind of binary. Either they're there or they're not there. Either you have the tradition, you don't have the tradition. And over here, the Gemara is talking about some sort of latent pathways of Gzera Shava, which could be turned on if necessary. Okay, I told you it's a this part of the Gemara is a little bit tricky, but still the Gemara is still arguing, which obviously it's been trying to do the entire Amud Beis, that the Samar Upishtim is superfluous. Now, according to Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel, so it's because it says Samar Upishtim, meaning that's the superfluous phrase. And you mean to tell me that without that, I would have thought that Klein B'tzitzis would in fact be prohibitive aksiv? So the Gemara says, I don't understand. We're actually entertaining. Had it not been for this drasha, had it not been for the smuchin, we're really entertaining that I can't make tzitzis of wool and linen? The Gemara says, how do we even entertain that? So here we are in Parsha Shlach, and V'tan Debei Rabbi Shmuel, and here we're going to learn a brisa of Rabbi Shmuel, and that's called Begadim Samu Pishtim Haim. So every baguette could be made up of either wool or linen, meaning this is the same V'tan Debei Rabbi Shmuel that we learned just in the middle of our Amud. So when the Torah says, Al kanfei vigdehem, so the beged over there means either wool or linen. Now, your beged, that's the garment, can either be made out of wool and linen. The Torah's instructions now is, hey, take strings and knot them into the corner. Now, the strings themselves are going to be made up of tcheles. Now, what do we know? The tcheles is a dye, but we also know that it's going to be dyeing a very specific material, notably wool. So now, even without the smuchin, sefer dvarim, the superfluous nature of the pasuk, even without all that, just look in the parsha and shlach, put everything together. Big dehem can either be wool or linen. A fixed tzitzis, tzitzis are made up of tcheles. Tcheles by definition has to be wool. So now, the Torah is telling me if I have either a wool or linen garment, and now attach tzitzis to it, and since it could be linen, and since it by definition has to be wool, boom, you have shatnez. Meaning, we couldn't entertain, not for a moment, the idea that your tzitzis cannot be made up of shatnez. It says it in the Parsha Shlach itself. Now, I say it's like you could read it right into it. Admittedly, you have to read into it, but we just did. Now, v'tcheles amrahu. And we know that tcheles has to be wool. Now, umimai de tcheles amrahu. So the Gemara says, now just let's just dot this I over here. How do I know that tcheles by definition is wool? I mean, sheish kisna tcheles amrahu. So because we know that sheish is a reference to linen and tcheles is a reference to wool. And Rashi over here goes through a couple of psukim sefer Yecheskel in which we know that our two candidates are either going to be wool or linen. Okay, it's a detail which I'm going to right now just run right over. But anyway, I want the question to be most prominent. And that is that we are looking right now at the Parsha of Tzitzis and Parsha Shlach, and we already see that it has to be Shatnez. It has to be Shatnez. So it's the Sakadacha Minakidarava. So the Gemara says, I don't know if it has to be Shatnez. It doesn't have to be Shatnez. Meaning, consider the following, the Drasha of Rava. The Rava Ramiksiv, Rava notes a discrepancy between the Psukim. Hakanaf, Minkanaf, Viksiv, Semro, Pishtim. So it says Hakanaf, which means it has to be Minkanaf. The strings that come off the garment have to be the same material as the garment itself. It also says beged, which is a reference to either wool or linen. Haketzad, well, that's confusing. Which one is it? So it's emro pishtim pochim bein beminam bein shalom beminam. If you're going to make up your strings either of wool or linen, you can put that to any garment you want. Your garment is made out of cotton, great. Wool or linen strings will work. Your garment is made up of any material, wool or linen strings are going to work. However, if your strings are made up of cotton, I know we don't do that, but if your strings are made up of cotton, so then it's hakanaf min kanaf. Then the strings and the garment have to match. Now, shar minam b'minam pochum, shal b'minam ein pochum. So what comes out over here is as follows. That's the shita of Rava, which means now that according to Rava, so we now have a way of making tzitzis. It doesn't have to be shatnez. So the Gemara says, okay, that's the shita of Rava. Congratulations. V'atana d'beir v'shmal leifle de Rava. I don't know if Rabbi Shmuel agrees to Rava. In fact, we don't have to say that at all. Meaning, according to Rabbi Shmuel, the only two materials that one could use in order to make tzitzis are only going to be wool and linen. Could be that he hasn't subscribed to Rava. So it's rechsalkada chamina ki diyuka de Rava hakadaf min kanaf v'hachi kamar rachmana. So the Gemara says, you're right, Rabbi Shmuel doesn't have to agree to Rava, but maybe what he subscribes to is the thought process of Rava. Meaning, he's also bothered by this discrepancy of hakanaf min kanaf. So v'hachi kamer chmana av leitzemer leitzemer upishin lepishtim v'chi avid etzemer leitzemer tzavei avat zemer lepishtim upishin leitzemer lokas of chmana etzemer upishtim dafil etzemer lepishtim upishin leitzemer. So maybe what we would have thought and entertained is the following. Here's how Rabbi Yishmael would line it up. Meaning, if I only had the parsha of Bamidbar, the parsha of Shlach, and that is, yes, the Torah allows for tzitzis to be made up of either wool or linen. But here's how it would work. If you're making a wool garment, put on wool tzitzis. If you're making a linen garment, put on linen tzitzis. But don't cross. In other words, don't cross. Now, if you happen to be making a wool garment and you put on wool tzitzis, so then dye it blue. Because the only material that you can dye blue is only wool. And if you happen to be making a linen garment with linen tzitzis, so then don't dye it blue. Meaning, that is what we could have entertained, Rabbi Shmuel's conclusion would have been, had he only had Parsha Shlach. Now I turn my attention all the way to Sefer Devarim, and now what is Sefer Devarim telling us? That Gidilim Taselach, and Semer Upishtim, and I'm sorry, that's the mitzvah of tzitzis. And then, Lo Silbash Shatnes, Semer Upishtim Yachtav. And then it goes and it repeats, and it's now superfluous, meaning Semer Upishtim, we knew Semer Upishtim. Semer Upishtim was already a given. And by virtue of the fact now that the Torah is repeating itself and it's superfluous, that gets us now to the point in which, why is it mufna, why is it superfluous? To teach us that you can cross, you can take the wool strings and put on the linen garment. That's why I need Sefer Dvarim Parshas Kiseitse to get me to the point where if I only had Parshas Shlach, I would have thought I couldn't cross. Parshas Kiseitse tells me that I can, in fact, cross. Okay, this is a great place to stop. In fact, we are going to stop over here. The truth of the matter is the Gemara has not finished this discussion, but it's the end of the daf. Correct. But the Hainuach, the Gemara assumes it to be the same thing. Okay, let's quickly recap our daf today. Okay, we learned at the end of yesterday's daf that that when there is any other of the arayas presented in a yibum scenario, she's not only your brother's wife, but she's also your daughter, so then you cannot marry her. And we have a drasha, which means what? That the default is that you can marry her. Now again, that's the default. The drasha tells us otherwise. But the default is that you can marry her. So why? I mean, it's a mitzvah sase, or a bumping up against a lo sase. Now that lo sase is a lo sase sheish bo kares. And then the Gemara says, and while we're on the topic, how do I know that an essay is docha lo sase? And today's daf, Yevamos, daf Dalid, deals with one issue. What is the source that tells me an essay is docha lo sase? And the answer is, to make a long Gemara really succinct and short, the answer is tzitzis. Klein, but tzitzis is going to be our source. But that's an oversimplification of today's daf, even as a summary. It's learned out via what's called smuchin, meaning a method of drasha is when I have two psukim next to one another. So what the Torah allows me to do is look at that juxtaposition and say, why they went next to one another? To teach me a halacha. Okay, so this is the idea of smuchin. And the Gemara, the bulk of today's Gemara's daf is that I want to address those people who are slightly opposed to smuchin, notably Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is opposed to it. In general, we saw that in his case study of Machshefa, where he clearly rejected smuchin, but in Sefer Dvarim, he's more open to smuchin. Why? Why is he more open to smuchin in Sefer Dvarim? So one of two possibilities. One, muchach, which is the design. Sefer Dvarim allows for this design in which, clearly, there is an interest in putting one next to another, as most of Sefer Dvarim is a review, and so therefore, by design, since it already discussed it previously in the Torah, and over here now, we're laying it out over here, clearly, what seems to be cluttered and clustered, it's not cluttered and clustered, it's there to teach us lessons. That's number one. And the other one is mufna. And the other argument is that in Sefer Dvarim, it's repetitive. As long as we can prove that this is a repeated point, and we didn't need to make this point, so therefore it's coming to teach us the halach of smuchin. So it's either muchach or mufna. So what we did over the course of the Amud Beis of today's daf is that we showed that by tzitzis, by klein but tzitzis, so it's both muchach and it's mufna. Muchach, that was easy, because it already said in Parsha Shlach. So over here now, tzitzis is reintroduced in Kiseitse, right alongside Shatnez. Okay, muchach, that's the design. Is it superfluous? So that was a tough hill to climb. And the Gemara, over the course of the Amud Beis of today's daf, also proved that it was mufna as well. Adkan.